This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Hello, welcome to episode 4 of our retail recovery series, brought to you by Charles Russell Speechlease. My name is Freddie Law, and I'm one of the hosts for the series, and I'm a commercial lawyer with a particular focus on the food and beverage and retail sectors, and looking at the critical legal issues in the sector right now. Today, we're looking at the world of e-commerce and digital transformation and giving some thought as to what organisations that operate in this space, or indeed organisations that have never operated in this space, should be considering and planning right now. And in order to do that, I've been joined by two experts on this topic, Jacqueline Wilkins and Chris Ingram, and I will leave it to them to introduce themselves to you now.
Hi, Freddie. Hi, Jacqueline. So my name's Chris Ingram. I'm a commercial contract specialist, and a big part of what I do is advising retailers, and so mainly advising them on their customer contracts and their supply contracts. And I do a lot of work in e-commerce, a lot of e-commerce initiatives and projects. Work a lot with innovative tech, so be it augmented reality apps or chatbots or the use of artificial intelligence. And I also do a lot of work with the suppliers themselves in terms of the technology solutions.
And I'm Jacqueline. I'm a senior associate in the commercial team as well, and I specialise in technology and IT. I have particular expertise in assisting clients on their legal elements of bringing their businesses online, and in particular to sell to consumers. I advise on the agreements for the underlying tech, and also in relation to the regulatory elements around selling to consumers. So that includes consumer law, compliance with advertising regulations, and data protection regulations as well.
Great. Thanks both. So clearly two experts on this topic, and that's a bit of our background. But I think Chris and Jacqueline, before we dive into the detail, I think it's probably helpful for our listeners if we just take a step back and actually thought about what are we talking about when we're talking about e-commerce and digital transformation?
Sure. When we're talking about e-commerce, certainly from a lawyer's point of view, and from how I advise our clients, it's talking about bringing a business online to be able to sell to consumers, and it's a particular focus for a lot of companies, even before the whole COVID-19 pandemic. So I think for a lot of our clients, they've suddenly found themselves in a position where they've either had to up their game in terms of the e-commerce because they are no longer able to sell online or sell physically, sorry. And suddenly, or for clients who have a physical presence, they suddenly realised that they don't have any other revenue stream and they were forced to go online and sell to consumers direct in that way.
And I think in terms of digital transformation, I mean, it's a pretty nebulous term, a bit of a buzzword. I mean, it's not just related to, again, not just the COVID terminology. It's been obviously around for years as a process, and basically means using digital technologies to improve your business and change your processes. It could be anything from getting online or setting up an e-commerce or migrating to the cloud. Often it's a lot wider reaching, and when we talk about digital transformation, we're also talking about sort of how technology is driving whole sectors and whole strategies and business processes. So a little bit wider, but the two subjects are really intertwined.
Yes, I'd have to completely agree with that, because I think the whole digital transformation piece is key to getting a good e-commerce experience for your consumers, and retailers are adjusting more and more to the needs of the consumers and to be able to deliver a good retail experience online, which is easy and convenient, and you do have to then rely on your underlying technology to be able to do that. Some of the bigger retailers have been focusing on omnichannel sales for quite a while now, and that relies on a lot of the underlying tech, as well as, you know, adhering to all the consumer regulations and making sure that everything's wrapped up in a great package for the consumers and adds to the customer experience.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. So I think that gives us a good understanding of what we're talking about, and when we're talking about e-commerce and digital transformation, which I think you both touched on, is clearly particularly important now, given that online sales are more important than ever. And I think it's part of a broader trend. I read recently that Zoom, for example, is worth more than American Airlines, Hilton and Expedia combined right now. So our reliance on tech is stronger than ever. I think moving on, because I know, Jacqueline, you've got particular experience here. I know we touched about on COVID-19 and how that's forced some businesses to get online that may not be able to rely on the sale of their physical goods right now. Can you give a bit more background about the sort of work you've done here and why it was so important, and what were the things you had to consider when advising a business that perhaps doesn't normally operate online to getting online?
Yeah, it was interesting that COVID-19 had thrown up these challenges for businesses. So a lot of businesses either had to accelerate their online plans if they were already in the works, or they had to start from scratch, or they may already have an online presence, but it wasn't a prime focus for the business. So in all three scenarios, they suddenly found themselves that they had to up their game, and then with that, making sure that they're not infringing any of the legislation whilst trying to rush to get everything online. So it was a particular challenge in trying to get all the tech infrastructure in place behind the scenes and negotiating those contracts, as well as putting in place all the customer-facing documentation that you would need, because that's the first, you know, that's one of your first interfaces with the consumer, and it's important to get it right from the outset. Things that we had to consider were things like, you know, what terms and conditions do the retailer already have? If they don't have any, then we would need to draft something for them. Whether they had plans to use customer data for advertising and marketing purposes, and the data protection considerations around that, what's actually being used on the website itself, whether cookies are being used, inevitably cookies are usually used, and then what the regulations are behind that as well. So the first things to consider for most retailers trying to go online is, you know, what are my minimum obligations under the law, and then help to build those documents out when we've identified what those obligations are.
That's interesting. And I guess, I mean, that's looking at it through the legal lens, but how often did you find the sort of legals came up against the commercials, really? You talked about making sure that it was right to the consumer-facing side and having the consumer-facing documentation, but did that sort of cause any friction from the business side? Is that something that you had to take into account much?
Yeah, it's always something that we have to take into account, because obviously the customer experience is key. And the most used phrase that I get from commercial people within retailers is, but that's ruining the customer experience. So we have to kind of integrate what is required under the law with how things look and is presented to consumers. So in terms of, you know, certain notices that you have to give consumers, you know, cookie pop-ups, how can we make those less irritating but still comply with the law? You know, how can we integrate terms and conditions into the sale process without making it look really boring? You know, we can work with the tech team to make sure that the legals are complied with, but also it flows nicely within the retail experience. So that's what we often have to do. The other one that we often have to navigate around is with the logistics team within clients as well. When there are always lots of questions around, you know, minimum return dates and processes, and, you know, who's responsible for paying for what? Does the customer have to pay for certain things? Do we as the retailer have to pick up certain costs for things? So it's navigating through that with the clients. And often, you know, if the retailer can afford it, they have very generous returns processes, but often with the smaller retailers, they're grappling with stock issues and the cost of actually processing returns processes, and they can't afford to give a 30, 40, 60 day returns period. So I'm often faced with what's the minimum we can do and get away with. So that's often a big challenge for us to try and get to grips with the commercial people.
Yeah, thanks. So, I mean, it sounds like sort of working on terms of sale, making sure the return process is aligned and things like that. Are there any sort of other legal documents that you think are sort of crucial or to consider at the early stages? I know you mentioned data protection, and clearly businesses want to be able to track their customers and keep tabs, for example, on the average order value and the conversion rate on their website. So I think perhaps in non-legal jargon for those listeners that aren't well versed in that, what would you sort of see as the main terms or things that businesses should be considering on that front?
The two most important documents when you're starting off are the terms and conditions of sale and the privacy notice. And often people roll their eyes when lawyers talk about terms and conditions of sale, but it's often underestimated how important this document actually is in a consumer relationship, because it's the contract that governs the sale of that particular item between the retailer and the consumer. And it should, a good terms and conditions of sale should address things like, you know, when does a contract actually form between the two parties. It's technical legal stuff, and it's not that interesting, but when something goes wrong, such as there's a pricing error on your website and you've suddenly had an influx of 5,000 orders for a product that you can't fulfill because you've listed it for 1p, then a good terms of sale should protect the retailer against a situation like that. So that document is really important to get right. And it also kind of limits your liability in certain situations. And so it basically limits the retailer's exposure to the consumer. And then in terms of the privacy notice, that's an absolute basic requirement of data protection law anyway. And, you know, most retail online businesses would want to be able to process customer data in more than just fulfilling an order. They probably want to be able to analyse that and use it for other purposes. So it's important to get that right at the outset so you can do what you think you want to do with the data moving forwards, and that's getting the right consents in place and the right wording to enable you to do what you want with that data.
And would you say that sort of terms of sale and the privacy policy, is that the sort of template for however you get online? Do you think business needs to take different approaches depending on what option or avenue they're going to go down? If they want to focus on a mobile app first, for example, or they're going to focus on a website, do you think that the fundamentals are really the same, or is there more than one way to skin a cat?
Yeah, I think the fundamentals are the same. I think it's also important if you want a seamless experience throughout the kind of retail experience that as a retailer you want to offer. So whether it's, you know, a mobile website and a website combined, you want to be able to keep the legals uniform across all of your platforms. And that simplifies things for everybody so that you know where you stand. So I would say the terms and conditions of sale can be pretty standardized. I think where it gets a bit more complicated is if the retailers are looking to use, say, cookies or tags or pixels on their websites and devices to analyze customer behavior or retarget customers with those, then that's where you get into more bespoke specific clients. But there's always a base level that's the same for everybody.
I suppose there's an underlying question as well, isn't there, about whether mobile apps are right for your particular business, or whether it's this website or using a browser through mobiles. Apparently there's during COVID, if you own a smartphone, you're likely to use it for more than 4 hours a day, apparently, and 90% of that is on apps. So this is a question as to whether, as a retailer, you want a slice of that pie, and whether you want to get an app, or whether it's not appropriate for your particular business, and it's not worth competing with the other 2 million or so apps out there. So there's an underlying question there, isn't there, in terms of what approach you want to take as a business. But either way, I agree with Jacqueline, it's all about the seamless sort of omni omni-channel approach, everything appearing to be the same and working together well.
Yeah, and I guess that's sort of how to get online quickly and the sort of main things to think about. But how do you think retail itself is going to change as a result of the growth in online? And what should retailers be doing to make the most out of it? I mean, Chris, you mentioned everyone's now on spending more time on the app. Does that mean that retailers should be focusing more on the mobile applications? What do you think the sort of the main things that retailers should be looking to with the growth of online right now?
I think it very much depends on the business and on your particular customer base. So, I mean, that needs some careful thought. I mean, there's some definite opportunities, both in terms of what's going on at the moment, COVID, lockdown, and just wider opportunities as well. So, I mean, at the moment, you've got almost a captive audience, haven't you, online? You've got millions and millions and billions of people stuck at home looking for some sort of creative or social experience. So there's a real opportunity for retailers to sort of tap into that and engage with new customers through social media or through apps or through other sort of online engagements. But I think then there's the wider advantages and opportunities. So, I mean, if you walk into a bricks and mortar store, the shop assistant has no idea who you are, what you might want to buy, what you bought before, what they should sell to you. Online, they know all that about you already. Everything can be personalized. The marketing can be really targeted. I think there's the concept of sort of big data has been around for a while. There's so much data. What do you do with it? Do you get sort of fancy analytics solutions in? But I think equally or more important is small data. So really focusing on the individual, and that's a real world and obvious opportunity here with online.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I guess that is sort of the opportunities. And then putting our lawyer's hat on, where we've always got to look for the risks as well, I guess. So what do you think are the main risks for businesses rushing through to get online? I mean, we've touched on there's much opportunity there, but of course, they need to be careful as well. And what would you be advising those businesses that are rushing through to make sure that this avenue and this sales online under lockdown, they can keep generating revenue and profit? What would you be telling them?
So I think the main thing is the most important thing is to consider the customer experience and the customer journey. So it's a question of thinking about what your customer wants. I suppose there's a risk of just not getting that right and rushing it out. So you've obviously got to plan things carefully. Query, how do you replace that sort of in-store human touch with the online sort of speed, efficiency, convenience, and what works for your particular type of consumer? So that's important. But where we then tend to see this is through sort of the back-end systems and behind the scenes. And there's obviously the operational risk of things not working properly that then powers that customer experience. So apparently, people won't wait more than 3 seconds for a retail page to load if they're going to make a purchase. And 0.5 seconds, apparently, I looked this up, can change sales by up to 10%. So it's obviously important to get everything running behind the scenes to power that. I think security is a risk online. Online payment fraud is predicted to be about $25 billion by 2024. And sort of connected to that, there's the sort of within our field data protection risks, so potential costs and fines for breaching GDPR, for example. And then I think there's just everything else that integrates into the process. It's a question of making sure everything works together, and there's a risk that it doesn't because it's quite complicated. So I'm talking about sort of systems integrations and processes and suppliers, so your inventory systems, your logistics suppliers, your warehousing. So there's a risk that just doesn't all work together. So it's a combination. And I think if you get that working, then you should hopefully have a smooth consumer journey.
Yeah, and so you talk about getting it right behind the scenes, I guess, which is just clearly important. But how does that sort of back end interact with the consumer facing side of tech?
So I think interaction behind the scenes is obviously massively important. I mean, that's what drives the whole consumer experience. And where we see this a lot is in terms of operational risks and how you mitigate those risks. sort of in terms of performance and capacity. So we work a lot with retailers or providers, so retailers who are partnering with providers and suppliers. And it's really, really important, I think, to select the right people to help you in the first place. So a lot of the projects that don't work out, it's often because the provider or your partner has promised to deliver something that perhaps they can't deliver. So doing your diligence in the first place is massively important. Then we get involved in the contractual side of things. So that's both with the technology suppliers, and also all underlying processes, so things like logistics suppliers as well. So we'll be looking at things like service levels. So in a technology contract, you might have service levels around latency, so speed and availability, security commitments, business continuity commitments. But it's not just about the contract. You need to also be thinking about how you can mitigate the risks more practically. So in terms of your technology, where's your data backed up? How can you practically get to your data more quickly? Can you have a more local sort of edge data center to reduce latency and lag? How can you mitigate your security risks? So in a data protection context, we look at a lot of the concept of privacy by design. So the idea that privacy and security needs to be built in all the way through the process. So you're not just thinking of it as a sort of separate risk. It's something to always bear in mind. And then sort of part and parcel of that is educating your customers and your staff in security. And then underlying it all, obviously, there's insurance points as well, and you look to get the proper insurance in place.
Thanks. Yeah, I think that's helpful. And I think something else that I just like to go back to is this concept of digital transformation, and how central you think e-commerce is to the process of digital transformation is what I meant to ask. And what else do you see organizations considering, if anything, when they're going through these processes?
Yeah, I mean, e-commerce is obviously a hugely important part of digital transformation for many retailers. But digital transformation isn't just about e-commerce. I mean, we see digital transformation in almost every sector we work in. And for retailers, I mean, it will touch almost every part of the process of what a retailer is doing, or it can touch every part of the process, including in store. It's everything from looking at efficiency behind the scenes. So we work with analytics solutions providers driven by AI who can predict stock requirements, or we see our clients using robotics or automation in their warehouses, for example. A lot of what we're seeing at the moment also is retailers migrating to the cloud, which has been very useful at the moment because you've got the ability with cloud computing to scale up quickly. So with everything going on with COVID, there's that ability to ramp up your operations very quickly. So yeah, e-commerce is an important part of digital transformation, but by no means the whole story.
So, and also in terms of digital transformation and the tech behind the consumer experience, some of our bigger retailers have been using things like augmented reality to help people try on clothes and trainers and generally make the consumer experience fun, as well as just focusing on the retail, you know, how can I buy this product? They're actually building a whole consumer experience around a particular product or a particular brand and engaging consumers in a different way. And all of that hangs on the tech that as a retailer you're able to use. So I think the e-commerce and digital transformation go hand in hand really well and really closely.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with both of you. And I think something that I'd also like to just talk about with you both now is when businesses are up and running again and back in their stores, whenever that may be, does this all sort of fall away? Does it become less important? I mean, how do you see the retail world changing as a result of COVID-19? And will e-commerce and digital be more important than they were before? I mean, they seem pretty important beforehand. Is that a trend that's just been accelerated, or are we going to go in a different direction with all of this?
Yeah, I think it's going to have a pretty profound effect. I think people form habits pretty quickly, and there'll be a lot of people out there who have not been shopping online, for example, before, and now are, or now relying on it and like the convenience and the ease of it. So I think we'll see habits change. It'll be interesting to see how retailers react. So obviously lots of retailers have scaled up massively in the last couple of months. I was reading that Tesco apparently, in the first few weeks of lockdown, Tesco had 600,000 odd online delivery slots a week, and now they're up to over a million. So they've had to get in 12,000 new staff to pick in their stores, because grocers tend not to have dark warehouses. If you're buying from a Sainsbury's or a Tesco, you'll be effectively paying someone to pick the stuff off the shelf for you and then deliver it. So they've got 12,000 new staff in their stores. They've got 4,000 new drivers. So the question is, once hopefully this all sort of changes back to something more like normality, what do those sort of retailers do? Do they scale back on their drivers and their staff, or do they scale back in store? And I reckon that it will be a bit of both. And there's probably going to be some knock-on impact of that. So lots of, if you're a bricks and mortar retailer, it's not necessarily always very profitable to be online, because you've got your fixed cost, you've got your store, you've got your staff. And if you're a Tesco's hiring lots of people to pick and things from the store, that's just an add-on cost. If you're a clothes retailer, apparently returns in clothes is likely to be around 30% online, whereas they only be around 10% in the store. So that's all very costly for retailers. So I think we'll start seeing a lot more innovation, and retailers will have to think about, if you're a bricks and mortar and online, you'll have to start thinking about how you change things, how you make them more efficient, and perhaps how you engage differently with your customers. So when Catherine mentioned augmented reality, that could be a really good way of, and some of our clients are doing that already, a really good way of engaging with consumers and trying to cut out sort of the wastage of return costs. So I think it's really going to drive innovation.
In terms of the importance of the, you know, rules and regulations around e-commerce, that's only going to come into further focus, I think, just as when you know, we had the introduction of the GDPR and everyone started focusing on data protection and scrubbing up their internal processes. I think as people move more and more to e-commerce, they're going to have to face up to the realities of consumer legislation as well. So they're going to have to, you know, maybe do an audit of their existing terms and conditions. You know, what information are you giving to the consumer at the start of the online journey? What are you giving them in the sales process, and what are you giving them after the sales process? All that is governed by consumer legislation and needs to be right. If you get it wrong, could extend the period of return for those products up to just over a year. So just jumping on Chris's example of, you know, online returns being around 30%, you don't want then the headache of someone trying to return something a year later because you haven't, and taking advantage of that, of those rules, because you haven't given the right information out to the consumer during the sales process. Similarly with data protection, that's always going to be really important, particularly if you want to use customer data going forwards. And as Chris mentioned, you know, the wealth of data that's available to you when a consumer shops online is immensely valuable in terms of, you know, planning for a retailer. So if you don't have the data protection rules correct around the use of that data, you're not going to be able to use that data. So it's only going to get more and more important.
We'll see changing habits. Did you see the Walmart data that they released in March? Apparently shirt sales have gone up massively and trouser sales have gone down massively because everyone's doing their video conferences. So there'll be a change in buying habits as well.
I hope that doesn't live through to when we're all back in the office and that people will be wearing their trousers. But yeah, thanks both. I definitely think that they're really good points. And I think what's become apparent to me from looking at this and talking to you both is the speed of the change and how fast paced and quickly this is moving, especially more now more than ever. And for those of you that
like a fun fact. I know that Pizza Hut was the first company to sell a physical good on the internet. And I think we probably, when we think of digital, online and takeaways, we probably don't think of Pizza Hut now, but we think of their competitor Domino's, who I know the CEO has described as a tech company that happens to sell pizzas. And I think that's a useful thing to keep in the back of your mind, is it underlines the speed of change and the need to keep your eye on the ball and keep focused on these issues and make sure that you're relevant and you're keeping up with consumers' changing tastes and habits and using technology to maximize your sales and profit. I would definitely agree with what both of you have said there. And I think as we're approaching the end of the podcast, what I'd just like to do is ask you for your top tips that you might have to organizations in this sector in terms of sort of the key takeaways that people should be thinking about when they're thinking about e-commerce and digital transformation.
Sure, Freddie. I think my top tip would be start as you mean to go on. Try not to be too lax about the rules and regulations at the start of your e-commerce journey as a retailer, because it's much harder to fix down the line. So it's good to, as much as possible, to get your ducks in a row and really think about how you want to be using customer data at the outset and how you want your customer experience to be. And we can build the rules around that. And complying is always going to be cheaper than facing a regulatory investigation and the reputational fallout that comes with that. So my top tip would be start as you mean to go on and do it as well as you can right from the outset.
So I mean, it's really, really important to get the right people in to help you, whether it's suppliers, whether it's partners, whether it's, I mean, potentially through acquisitions. But I mean, if you're building your own bricks and mortar store, you wouldn't try and do it yourself. You get people in, you get an expert in to help you. So do your due diligence, make sure you've got the right contractual nexus in place, and think really carefully about who it is you can partner with or work with on that front. I mean, also look at it as an opportunity as well. Think slightly longer term. So how can you use this as an opportunity to build your relationship with a supplier or a partner, and think about how you can use this to your advantage.
Great, thanks. Useful top tips, definitely to take away at the end there. So I'd like to just say thanks to everyone for listening. And if you do have any questions or comments over what we've discussed, then please do get in touch at retailrecovery@crsblaw.com. Thank you very much.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.